Hi, my name is Michael Creamer, and welcome to the We Make It Work Corporate Real Estate Podcast. Today, I'm talking to Chris Kane, who is author of Where Is My Office? And the post-pandemic edition, which is coming out soon, Reimagining the Workplace for the 21st Century. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Michael. Great to have the opportunity to chat with you.
And depending when this goes out on the airwaves, when is the book either being published or coming out?
Book will be out on the 25th of May.
All right, so let's dive in at the deep end. Well, tell me about the book that you wrote, but the update. What's the biggest change that you write about in this new edition?
Well, I guess it was a look at the Irish that I published the first edition just when the pandemic was in full flow and we were all locked down. And I've been banging on for years about the need to really properly consider people and place rather than the other way around. But we wrote the first edition to try and build a better appreciation of the link between an effective workforce and an effective workplace. But I agonized in terms of the tone for that first edition. You know, I've been very lucky to be involved in a hell of a lot of major projects, from facilities to construction to portfolio, and understand organizational change probably better than most real estate people. And all of that experience says that the way we do things could be better, and we could be better ancestors. But I also recognize that, having been both a service provider and a client, having been involved in all of these aspects of facilities, construction, and real estate, that our industry is slow to change. And writing a book, a business book about Where's My Office, you know, was a dream of mine, which was very lucky that Bloomsbury plucked me out as an unproven author to write this book. But they said, look, business books don't sell. Then along came the pandemic. And I'm delighted that Bloomsbury then came back to me afterwards, and that apparently it sold really, really well, which surprised them and surprised me even more, to say, would you write a post-pandemic edition? This has given me the platform to say what I really wanted to say, because we as an industry have been very fortunate to have had some great experiences, but we're working on an outdated model. And whilst you can have great arguments about work from home and hybrid and all of this sort of stuff and construction methods and practices, the future of facilities management, commoditization, and the whole nine yards, what we really need to think about is that, what do we do at a system level? Our system is premised upon having an investment return from certain revenue flows from rents. And the issue is that the pandemic not only changed the game, but changed the entire stadium. And rather than debating tactical things, we need to look at the strategic level. We need to take ESG into account. We need to take our people, and the development and the equality and diversity agenda into what is a predominantly white, male and stale business sector. And we need to really make ourselves fit for purpose for the 21st century.
So no small ambition then, writing the updated version. You talked about a number of things there, and we could probably start anywhere, but let's just dig in maybe quickly into the patterns of working that you see going into the future. We were talking about this earlier, but this idea that pre-pandemic there was the well-worn notion of omnichannel retailing, so multiple ways in which you can buy and consume goods. The same seems to be happening, maybe with some differences, in the world of office space. Do you want to just talk us through that a little bit?
Great observation, Michael. I think you've hit the nail on the head in that we as an industry are geared up, and we've been very successful at this, and we do it really well. You know, I'm not saying that our system is broken, but external events have changed the entire game. And we've always worked on the premise of headcount and occupancy, on the presumption that people who do office work go to work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, to the same place, and anything else is an exception. That was the broad general proposition. That started to change with the arrival of cloud computing and the iPhone, And we've been fiddling around with activity-based working and a whole raft of other tried and tested methods. Like even hybrid, the general media say, oh, this is new. Well, actually, many of us, you know, ourselves included, have been practicing and advising and experimenting with various models of hybrid for decades. But what has really happened is that employers have now recognized that they as organizations can work differently. And the employees in parallel have also recognized, hey, I don't need to go to the office every day. I don't need to have the costs of commuting. I don't need to make sacrifices in terms of being a parent and missing out on my child's growth and development. And that, I think, is something we as an industry have failed miserably to appreciate, that the pandemic brought about a period of massive reflection. And it's also accentuated the views of those of the under 35s that they want to do something different and they're going to vote with their feet. Now, for you and I, that is an anathema in terms of that's unthinkable. Well, it's happening.
So what you're talking about, I mean, I think we all get, but there's, and we'll come back to ESG, I think, but technology, the two big global sort of mega trends that are affecting everything, technology and ESG. And that obviously those are interlinked as well. But if we just think about technology with ChatGPT, with AI, where's this going to take us? Because it's not where we are now, I would suggest, because we're not static. We haven't, you know, you see a lot of data points now coming out saying, oh, everyone's back in the office 2 to 3 days a week on average. I think we can, with all due respect, kind of ignore that, because that's not the end position. That's the position we're in now. Good, we've got the data. Where would you think we're going to go with that?
I think, being honest, we don't know. One thing is for sure, that our default approach of assuming a one-size-fits-all will continue, that's gone out the window. I think it's really interesting to see and observe some business leaders, not all, starting to talk about the need to innovate and to experiment with different types of models. And so far, that experimentation has been limited to what I would call analog parameters of 3+2, 2+3, 4+1. The debate around work is still in full flow, and we don't know exactly where it's going to land. You know, I mean, typically you would say, well, the technology industry will go this way, the financial services industry will go that way. And that's why you need to link together people, place, technology and leadership, all underpinned by a better understanding of how we use this precious commodity, which I call Mother Earth, our planet. And we can't ignore any of this stuff anymore. So that's why, you know, Rob Harris, who I'm working on with the BCO study, talks about our industry is going to need a whole new raft of disciplines. Chartered surveying, valuation, engineering, project management are yesterday's jobs. And that's why we as an industry need to really engage and understand and build fresh perspectives and have the courage to go beyond conventional thinking, because we're in a different ball game and the stadium has changed completely.
So maybe just pick up on that and think about those disciplines, because again, I agree with the logic and the train of thought. I think those disciplines that you mentioned survive in some shape or form, for sure, because they're needed. What you're saying is it's an add-on, it's not a replacement.
Yes.
Correct? Okay. And then, and some of that is change management, because we're going through massive change, and that's a well thought through job, if you like. So there's lots of people who are expert in change management. But what is it that we're missing? I mean, I always pick on data and analytics as something that we're poor at. I think, you know, you're beginning to see in the FM space experienced managers as another example. Is that what you're referring to?
In part, but I think our biggest issue in terms of technology is the arrival in recent months, the last 3 to 6 months, of ChatGPT, but also the maturing of what I would call sort of AI and machine learning. And people, you know, ChatGPT seems to be the new poster child, but it's only the one aspect of a whole raft of different technologies, all of which are digital, all of which large enterprises are saying, we've got to rethink things seriously here. You know, if you think about it, most organizations, whether they're public or private sector, have based their model on industrial age paper processing thinking. You know, one of the things that hasn't been said is that the pandemic killed paper. How many organizations, lawyers included, now have pieces of technology similar to DocuSign? You know, so we've moved on. What does that do for office occupancy? Maybe we should be thinking not just about measuring environmental performance. Maybe given that one of the key questions that came out of the BCO research was, how do you run a facility for 3 days a week? Should we as an industry be looking at things like the airline industry did, which was yield management technology? And that's not forgetting that, you know, long-standing tools such as Zoom and Team video conferencing have now become commonplace, whether you're a grandparent or a grandchild. And we need to accept that. And we need to see that some of the providers of these tools have expanded them and they're adding on AI capability to, say, things like MS Office. So the possibilities are endless if you're running a business. And we, as an industry, should not be sticking our heads in the sand. We should be embracing these apparent challenges and considering what opportunities can we do to make better profits. There's nothing wrong with that, but that needs to be done in a socially and purposeful basis. You know, in the book, I talk about the Smart Value Framework and talked about what we were able to do at the BBC to generate not only millions of dollars of enterprise value, but billions in terms of social value. So, you know, I mean, we've got to move into the 21st century. We've got to understand that it's no longer just about shareholder value. It's about stakeholder value. We need to get serious about carbon reduction, and we need to fully embrace and understand ESG.
So let's pick up on one of those things. You talked about this Smart Value Framework, and to me, at least, the businesses, to varying degrees, are shifting, as you said, and thinking about shareholders and stakeholders. And for me, that's profit and profit and purpose, if you like. Profit is obviously what the shareholders are fundamentally interested in, but now increasingly they're interested in the social value that can be created. And certainly the idea of businesses having a purpose, which is making money and something else. Does that wrap into this idea of a sort of a value-based approach to real estate?
I think it does. You know, real estate has a bit of a Walter Mitty character in that it serves two masters. It, you know, has traditionally recognized just one, which is the property investor. But it's more important now to pay attention to the other one, which is consumer. And it has to recognize that for the first time ever, that particular consumer, the tenant, has to pay attention to its workforce. And that gives a causal link between workforce preferences and the demand for new offices and indeed the consumption of existing footprints. Footprints are going to reduce. Therefore, one could say, if you were on a negative point of view, we're facing an existential crisis here. And we need to stop sticking our heads in the sand and saying it'll all be cyclical, it'll all go back to the office, everything will be all right in the night in 2 years' time. It won't.
No, and I'm not sure many, or at least in my experience, I don't think many people are saying that. I think they're probably ignoring that rather than saying it's going to go back to where it was. I guess, and I don't know if you touch on this in the book, but imagine you're back in one of your corporate roles today and you're running global real estate. You've got all the traditional, let's call it, you've outsourced some of the work that you need doing. You've got an internal team, whatever mix you have of that. But what are you doing now? How do you interact with the leadership of that business as a real estate professional, given what you're talking about is that real estate's moved from the periphery to center stage?
Yeah.
And it's moved there because of ESG, and it's moved there because to some extent it helps define the purpose of that business, or rather it has to reflect the purpose. It's probably a better way of saying that.
Yeah.
But what do you do as that global head of real estate to affect this change that you're talking about?
God, that's a very wide question. I was very fortunate in that I had a really good relationship with the C-suite at the BBC for a variety of reasons, because I guess I did things somewhat differently. You know, when we were doing the £1 billion Project Broadcasting House, and I brought in a technologist to run the project rather than a property or construction expert. A few heads were turned, but essentially that's what Broadcasting House is. It's a massive production factory which is built around a new technology. And understanding Mark Thompson, the CEO and Director General of the BBC in my time, understanding that he was on a road from moving the BBC being a world-class broadcasting entity from analog to digital, I had to take the real estate function along a similar journey. And I'm very proud to say that, you know, we managed, we weren't perfect, but we got a lot of strange looks, and we're saying, that's not how we normally do things around here in the BBC. And then the wider industry said something similar. But if we'd accepted that, then Media City UK would not be the place it is today, because we broke the rules with property development and engaging in a public-private partnership with Peel, with Salford, with the BBC, with ITV, with independent producers for there. And that's up there now, and it's thriving.
And I think that, I mean, you've hit on the whole issue of technology. I was talking to Nigel Miller, who's running the pillar, as you well know, for the BCO on technology. And he said, you know, he's been trying for 30 years to get technology included at the front end of the design process. And I think ROBA stage one, and it's always been further down the chain. And in the last year, he thinks he's finally seen the shift to where it's considered up front, because we're saying that the need to understand the digital world that we now live and operate in and how quickly that's changing has to be fundamental to any building decisions we make.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things when the history is written of the 2020 pandemic was that it removed the last obstacles to our move to a digital world, not an analog, not a office or industrial age world. We're now digital. And that's a difficult pill for a lot of people to swallow. And if you talk to technology folk or technology innovators, they find our industry impenetrable. They cannot engage with us, and to our shame, because it offers so many opportunities. And we try and use pieces of technology to add on to the existing model, which is fragmented, disjointed, and not fit for purpose anymore.
So big change is coming.
Well, I think if we don't change,
someone else will.
This industry is ripe for massive disruption from the outside. It won't be incremental. It could well be fundamentally different. You know, and I said in the first edition, and I'll say it again, you know, enterprises are changing so dramatically, and it's going to get even worse on the back of the opportunities unleashed by ChatGPT. What's that going to do to organizations and their internal support functions? You know, you and I have been involved with Cornet for many years and looking at the future, and the ISIS proposition, bringing together HR, property, technology. Has that time arrived at last? I think it has.
I think it has. And we actually, we were chatting about this, but also in terms of this disruption, I think, you know, at least for me, the arrival, if you like, of WeWork before the pandemic and what that company did to disrupt our industry, it got corporates really for the first time looking seriously at flex space as part of their business operations, not just swing space or flex space. And I think we're in for the same sort of radical change now, driven even more so by technology and also the ESG question.
And it's I agree with you. You know, WeWork basically enabled people outside of corporate real estate and commercial real estate, actually the business leaders, to understand, hey, I've got choice. The game has changed even further in that we're moving on to, I think, a new paradigm. There will be fixed. The office is not going away. It's not obsolete, but it's going to be used in a different way. And that's where purpose is going to be much more important. But we're going to consume it on three different levels. There'll be fixed space, there'll be flexible space, and there'll be fluid space. And the fluid bit covers the arrival of the metaverse. It'll cover the fact that Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, is in the last chapter for some organizations, not all. And that goes back to my earlier point that, and it'll be our single biggest challenge, how do we cope with the world where one size fits all doesn't apply anymore?
And I think that is, to me, in a way, the biggest challenge, because that's absolutely, as you say, gone. because we have the technology to allow it to be gone. So we've given people choice, which you think has to be a good thing, but it's created this massive problem for the industry that's used to effectively supplying one size does fit all, right?
Yeah. And, you know, many people talk about how can I get an elastic building and all of these challenges. And, you know, to be fair to the industry, it's highly risky. It's hugely dependent upon, you know, stable revenues and all that goes with it. So, you know, I can understand all of that. And that's why I think one of the things that if we could have in the next few months is a proper dialogue between the providers and investors of the product and the consumers of the product and the policymakers. Because as you rightly say, purpose, ESG, is now a major component in this. And it's no longer just supply and demand. The game has changed and the entire stadium has changed.
Mm. And what do you mean exactly by the policymakers? What sort of groups are you talking
about? It's government, it's NGOs, it's academia who influence the thinking behind how we learn and how we research, and the fact that, you know, you take this country, you know, the issue and the complaints about the Town and Country Planning Act. You know, we need a 21st century system for living in the 21st century rather than relying upon 20th century Henry Ford homogenized standardized thinking. People now want customized solutions, they want choice, and they want, you know, a clear approach to the world which, you know, respects the principles of ESG.
So that means bringing together the organizations that you and I know and have been members of within the property world with the ones that focus on business specifically, and there's this sort of melding of finally of business and property not being separate disciplines but one influencing the other.
I agree. You know, I mean, we've got to accept that the only purpose of real estate is to help the performance of the business, and in essence you could argue that therefore we're helping the overall GDP of the country. So there's a strategic imperative so to do, and then there's the future of cities, the future of CBDs, the future of towns. You know, and it's all linked together. And what we've fallen into the trap in the 20th century of having things very standardized, very commoditized, very siloed, and everything is neat and tidy. The 21st century has arrived, and with all the stability and instability, should I say, and volatility, you know, who knows what's going to happen? But, you know, people talk about uncertainty being the only certainty. We have that in spades now, don't we?
We do. Maybe to wrap up, Chris, and back to the book, you know, you can, we were talking about this as well, but you can look at this in a negative way or a positive way in a sense, right? Massive change. People don't like it. It's disruptive. We don't really know what's coming, what the end game is, right? So that uncertainty fuels a lot of issues, I guess. But how do you finish up your book, I guess, is my question. Are you on the positive side that we've got an industry that can adapt? Are you writing that, you know, someone else is going to step in and take over because we've got it all wrong?
I've always been an optimist. I've always been, I suppose, stupid enough or brave enough to experiment and do different things with different people in different ways. I remain overly positive. In the book, we've shown people a framework for how to ask the right questions, but also to approach things using joined up thinking. If there's one thing I learned at the BBC was understand your customers, speak the language of broadcasting, but understand how it all fits together. Our fragmented, convoluted, costly delivery system, we need to rethink that. And looking at it, we need to be thinking about people, place, technology, and leadership. And the Muir Diamond, as we call it in the book, gives people one. Because all the playbooks and all the precedents and models we've got to rely on, they're not fit for purpose anymore because they're based upon a different time and a different way of people thinking. We're different people post-pandemic. Hopefully, we'll never see the likes of it again. But we can't ignore the fact that we could. Economic instability and inflation is back. You know, most people in the business world now have no experience of what you and I experienced in the 80s of, you know, double-digit mortgage rates. Heaven forbid that we go back there. Hopefully not. Geopolitical instability, maybe the end of globalization. Who knows? you know, and if you had all of these, you get a headache. I remain optimistic because there's an awful lot of good people, a lot of talent in our world, and we have a positive contribution to make to society. But we need to do it better, and we need to do it now rather than waiting for others to do it for us.
Chris, as always, great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Best of luck with the book launch.
Thank you.
I'm sure it'll sell well, and then we'll have version 3 in another 6 months. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.